Hey James, how are you doing today?
Doing good. How about you?
It's already been a pretty hectic, busy day, but it's a good thing. Yeah,
It's hard to slow it down sometimes, I
I
tell
was
you.
just gonna say, never seems to slow. But, and I've said this for a long time, I'd rather be busy than bored, so certainly no complaints on my
There
end.
you go. Yep. Yeah, and it's
So,
fun, if you keep
oh, go
the
ahead.
inspiration going through it. I said it's fun if you can keep the inspiration up, as you go put out fires.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think if you love what you do, that makes a big difference as well.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So I believe, James, you mentioned today the plan was to talk about the bigger picture with the Celestine Prophecy. Is that still correct?
That's correct.
Awesome.
What I mean by that, just so you'll know, is we've got a bunch of books out there, and when you think about tuning in spiritually and having a better life, you can get lost in the details a little bit. So I now have a kind of personal reminder about the big picture. So. And keep that in mind, it kind of grounds you into all everything else.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that gives me a good point of reference from which to pose my question. And
Okay.
I'm thinking I probably can probably make like 30 to 40 minutes work. Just as always, I have an interview right after as well. And if that works for you, then
Okay. Yes.
I can make that a win-win, and I can jump in and just let it play out as we normally do.
Good. Yeah,
Awesome.
look forward to it.
Perfect. So if you're ready, I can jump right into interview mode.
Okay. Hold on just one second. Let me, got a background noise here. Let me take you out.
Yeah.
Turn that going. Okay, let me just get this off. I'm sorry. Let me just do one thing here.
Yeah, no worries.
Now we're ready. This thing is definitely off at this point. Okay, good. I'm ready.
Awesome. Perfect. Hello, everybody. It is Corey Poirier, and excited to be back with the latest edition of the Conversations with Passion radio show. My upcoming guest here in a second, you'll recognize him. We've had him on the show many times, and at the same time, always exciting to hear from him, and we always seem to be able to cover new ground. So I'm excited to do the same today. So James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy, creator of the Celestine Vision, so excited to have you here today. I usually get you to do a little bit of a backstory because I always worry about the listeners who may be discovering you for the very first time. I'll let you decide if you want to do that today, or I know we're going to cover some ground talking about the Celestine Prophecy as a whole, so we may cover some of your background in that process. So I'll let you decide which you prefer.
Well, let's just say this, I'm the author of The Celestine Prophecy, which is a book about tuning in to a more inspired life, and a book that traveled the world. And I think it points to the fact that many of us sense that there's a better way of doing life. There's a more spiritually connected inspiration that we can find. And so the books, I've written four books in that series and some other nonfiction books. So I'm really a writer about slowing down, tuning in, and having a more inspired life where your soul gets nourished.
Wow. So, James, that's I mean, it's such a, and you know, I feel this way as well, but it's such a powerful topic in the sense that today, maybe more so than ever, and I don't even know if when you wrote it, if you realized maybe how sort of relatable it would be and how relevant it would be in 2017, but, you know, the idea of slowing down, if we start there, that seems to be something that a lot of people struggle with today, maybe more so than ever. So would you say that the Celestine Prophecy is something that's relevant and relatable in terms of what you covered in the book today as much as or more so than ever?
Yeah, it seems to be multi-generational even. I think every generation goes through the same questions about life and deals with the same, many of the same issues in life. You know, how do I do all that I need to do to not just survive, but to engage in social activities and family life and dealing with children and all those things at the same time, being able to say, well, what's the bigger picture of life? You know, what's the larger questions about my life? You know, am I really just running the rat race, or do I have something that inside my soul wants to do, and how do I integrate it with all the demands on me? So it's it's a book that speaks to those questions, and I think that's why it's endured.
And so, you know, that brings up an interesting follow-up question, but you're out, of course, speaking on the various books that you've written. For people that don't know, you've written more than one book in that series. Do you find people, if we kind of relate it to whenever you're talking about the book or people that reach out to you through the website or via email, do you find that you're still getting as many questions as you would have when the book was fresh? Because obviously when it was fresh, that's whenever, you know, everybody is seeing it all at the same time. But do you find that people are still asking those similar questions or questions about how do I slow down, or you covered this in the prophecy, how does this work? Do you find that still as current in that way as well?
I think the books sort of speak for themselves, and they talk about how to tune in to a more inspired life. And it's, again, what every generation, what every human being deals with and ponders. There's a lot of, the books are stories, the demonstrations of just how this more intuitive life works and how you can find a soul's mission and how to get help with that, you know. So, but, you know, lately the questions have been, well, you know, how do I understand this in a nutshell? You know what I mean? How do I keep it in mind? And I always talk about looking at the big picture, you know, the big picture of life. And whenever we get, you know, in a place where we're struggling to get everything done and we feel like we're in a rat race, how do you find some time to just remember the largeness of life and the part of life that's inspiring? So that's what I've been doing lately.
And so, James, you know, when we talk about the book, let's say, and the fact that it's obviously shared more in an adventure or fable style, whenever you were writing it, I'm just trying to get sort of inside your head with this, but were you conscious of wanting to, or was that intentional that you wanted to do it as an adventure? And did you feel people would learn more that way through the adventure? Or was that just the way that it spoke to you? Because I say this because obviously there's a lot of amazing fable books out there, but at the same time, you know, a lot is relative because compared to the amount of books that aren't fable books or adventure books, it's obviously a smaller number that went that direction. So was that intentional, or was that just the way that it spoke to you?
Well, you know, I've really determined that my angle on a lived spirituality, what I now call an authentic spiritual experience, which is the greatest life you can have, by the way. But tuning into that is, you know, shifting gears a little bit. Ordinary life is much of a rat race. People don't reflect on the bigger questions of life. So, you know, in order to make it clear what I was discovering and what I believe that the whole all of humanity, was bringing in the consciousness, was needed to be revealed in a story of people discovering this consciousness and people arguing about it and breakthroughs and the hard questions and all that can take place in a story with a group of characters on an adventure. Now the adventure part is what I think is best in a way, because it's life is an adventure. In fact, life is an inspiring adventure, a detective story into your own best life as you search for it. So, you know, I just felt that the whole subject worked better in a story about the adventurous nature of life that can be discovered.
And so, James, in the first book, obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, because somebody who is being introduced to the book for the first time may not realize this, but you covered insights, I believe 9 insights. And so can you share with us in terms of, again, and I'm thinking first, I guess we can look at both sides, because somebody who has read it obviously still might gain insight from this as well. But with those insights, was there a specific order? And if so, I guess, and obviously the book was presented in a specific order, but was there, from your perspective, a specific order you wanted to present them in? And is there one or two that you always say are the most profound or important ones? Or the fact that there's 9 speaks for itself in the sense that, you know, you want people to remember and relate to all 9?
Well, if you think of all 4 books, there's 12 insights out. And again, these are not insights that James Redfield made up. I was looking at in the culture and finding people who are out there discovering this spiritual life that is what our brains are really wired for, not all this cynicism and atheism and stuff. You know, it's our brains are designed, in my view, to download the rest of our intelligence, you know, and that's a spiritually connected intuition that helps guide our lives. And that's why it's starkly important right now, because we can just be whipped in one direction or another, you know, in these political conflicts that are happening out there, or we can stay centered into our own, you know, conscious development of our life story. And in fact, our destiny as it can unfold. So there are 9 of, I mean, there are 12 insights altogether. What I'd like to do, rather than go through all those, though, is just talk about this big picture. You know, let's say you read the books and you know, they've just, you know, they've been on bestseller lists, you know, in 30 countries. So many people have read the books already, but there's a whole new generation, you know, of people waking up. And as at a certain time in life where you wake up and say, is this all there is? Well, no, there's more. So, you know, there are a lot of people both who have read it and people who are tuning in for the first time, and all that's great, but I've lately wanted to distill it into, you know, 5 ideas of how to put it into practice in your own life. And that's what I call the big picture. So what I'd rather do is sort of go through those. And I think there's these can be like seen as you know, sort of wake up reminders. You know, stay awake to the fact that life is more than just the material chasing of money and meeting our responsibilities. There's like I tried to suggest, there's an adventure that we can step into. And life is supposed to be much more mysterious than that, and much more inspiring than that. And so I think that the way I start with describing this big picture of, you know, how we move into our best life is first of all, to listen to our souls. And what does that mean? That means there's a part in every one of us that says, wait a minute, I'm living life, but there's something missing. There's more somehow. You know, my soul wants to do more, something else out there. And it's that silent little missing, missing feeling that we have that keeps us awake. It keeps us from just, sort of going into the daily routines without, staying above it in a sense. But if you remember, there's something each of us always feels. And it's funny about this because, there's a whole psychology of adolescence that says, this feeling people have is an ego thing, and it's useful narcissism where people think they're self-important. And sure, our egos can get carried away in this. But more important is to keep that in alive. That's not a pathology. That is our soul reminding us, hey, there's another level of inspiration we can find in life, where we do what our souls really want to do, and it's we have to open up to a part of life that is not entirely part of the day in day struggles and routines. To me, the first part of the big picture is really just remembering there's more out there. Life is about something more. Don't let that get talked out of you by someone, especially if you're young. Don't let the adults who have coped somehow, keep you in a place where you've lost the sense of magic about life. There's something there. To go a little further, once we keep ourselves awake, we really do have to nurture this part of ourselves, this soul awake part of ourselves, if we could call it that. And that's where a practice of meditation or prayer is instrumental. And, meditation is not just something cool to do to reduce stress, or prayer is not something to just do because it's part of a religious routine. There's something happens in those moments of silence, because both meditation and contemplative prayer is more of a listening than a directive. In this case, you're trying to open up that spiritual connection. And it's really interesting because the experts in meditation will always say that the first thing we do in meditation is try to be silent and to try to calm in our minds. And that's always the hardest part, because our minds are full of chatter and fears and responsibilities unmet. I forgot to do that. And then when you try to be silent, that's what emerges, right? So, the practice itself of meditation, I really am screaming across the world trying to communicate that this is a ticket into a larger intelligence. And here's how it works. When you meditate, try to be silent, try to just listen, try to feel a kind of love connection, because we have emotional chatter too. Oh, I was hurt by this person. What did I do? What did I say? I should have done something else. If I'd just been different, they would have loved me. All these things come up, and they have to be released. And what I mean by release is just as soon as you find that chatter, whatever it is coming up, you just focus again on just feeling a kind of love connection, coming from the divine part of yourself that is there. And, then it'll come back, but you have to let it go again. See, that's a practice, is letting go of the chatter so that you can stay in silence. And that silence place is what grows in your in your daily life as you, the more you meditate. Now, the silence place is where the intuitive guidance comes from, because instead of all these chatter thoughts, you'll start to have a kind of directive thought what if I did this? What if I called this client now? What if I wait till tomorrow to call instead? What if I call this old friend now? You know, you'll get thoughts to do something. And those are intuitive guidance that comes in. Now, this is the chief way that a higher consciousness, a spiritual connection, helps our lives go easier. So those are the first two. You know, find, you know, one is to remind yourself to stay awake, and the second one is to practice a spiritual download. When you can get quiet inside, down, you know, into your minds, come thoughts that are not chatter thoughts, not ego thoughts. There are intuitive thoughts. And those intuitive thoughts are the ones that guide us to do the right thing. They're strategic. And that's why so many people say, well, people say things like, you know, I'm doing God's will. Well, what is that? Is that just something to say? Or is that an experience that is actually a kind of directive to help strategize our lives as we go forward on a daily basis? You know, it's every religion has some version of that. But the authentic spirituality tunes in and acknowledges that as part of our human nature, because we're connected at some level, you know, in this quiet space, we connect with a greater spiritual intelligence.
So interesting, James, before you jump into the remaining ones, when you mentioned that about, you know, meditation and it not necessarily always being chatter thoughts, if you will, one of the things that came up during an interview that I conducted years ago was that I discovered that Jack Canfield, who, for listeners who aren't familiar with Jack, co-created the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, they struggled with the name for that book series for about 3 months. They just couldn't come up with a name that felt right to everybody involved. And Jack said that during one of his meditations in what he calls his hour of power, so for him that means the first morning he dedicates the first hour to Jack, divides it into 20 minutes, 20 he does feeding his mind, so learning, 20 minutes is exercising, so we'll say feeding his body, and then 20 minutes is meditation, which we can say maybe is feeding his spirit. Interestingly, he said he came up with that title for the book during one of those meditations, and he said, so, you know, without meditating, if nothing else, and obviously so much more comes from meditation benefit-wise, he practices it every day, but that's just one tiny thing that came up, and as soon as that title came to him out of nowhere, he shared it with Mark Johansson, the co-creator, and the publisher, and they all said, that's the name. So, you know, you're talking about it not necessarily always being mindless chatter. In his case, that listening to that non-mindless chatter could have been the difference maker in that book series.
Yeah. Most people who getting started, you know, they have to deal with the chatter because, you know, your ego is telling you, wait a minute, what are you doing? You don't have time for this. Children are about to get up. you have to use this time in some other way. You know, this is the important thing for people out there listening. The important thing about this kind of prayer, contemplation, or meditation is that you're going to get something from it over time. I mean, it's hard at first because you have to let go of that ego chatter. But what you get is your guiding intuitions. You'll get thoughts that come to you, and you say, well, where'd that come from? You know, you call an old friend, and they say, I was just thinking about you. I got this to tell you, and it becomes a synchronicity, a meaningful coincidence that matters in your life. I mean, you start to live an inspired life because you're getting from your higher spiritual intelligence, you know, your connection with the divine within you comes a helpfulness. You're being helped through life. Life goes better. And like you say, if you spend an hour a day, if you spend 30 minutes a day, if you spend 20 minutes a day, you'll be able to live more in your waking time or in your just regular routine. You'll be gradually able to live in that space almost totally. So you don't get a lot of ego chatter. What you get is thoughtful intuitions that come to you. And if you trust them enough to explore that, whatever it's telling you to do, you'll see that it's a part of you that knows strategically how to conduct your life. And out of that comes experiences that where you realize that, you know, some part of the project or the goal or mission that you have gets, you know, finds a solution, is helped to move forward. So, just like Jack was saying, you know, you get something from meditation. You get something from this.
And so, James, you shared the first two. And so are you okay to jump in and share the other three with us?
Of course. You know, the next one is getting into the habit of operating on intuitive guidance. Now, intuitions are vague. You have this vague hunch or gut feeling. Sometimes it's a picture that you see yourself doing something, going back to school. You see yourself, you know, riding the bus to work today. And what you're looking for is the payoff for the intuition. And I gave the example of the synchronicity, but that's worth exploring some, because what happens if we follow these intuitions, you know, people follow intuitions, you know, the most famous story, I'll just give an example. Most famous story is the mother, actually the father who decided to take another route home, walk home from work, and just intuitively said, hey, and that felt, you know, it felt like the right thing to do. He did it. He found his daughter being assaulted on the street there, which he broke up and saved her from a terrible experience. So, you know, I've heard probably 10 thousands of these stories that people give me. So this is not any kind of self-delusion. You know, our rational part goes, you sure that's not self-delusion? No, this is spiritual intelligence. Like, we are helped in life. And what happens when we learn to recognize these intuitive thoughts and seek to follow them? And I always say there's another part to this, which is logic. It's one thing to rely on intuition to help you decide on something, but then you use the logic you've learned, and you have to make sure, talk to other people who are logical, and make sure you have an operating logic that's sound. But, you know, okay, let's say this intuition is coming back over and over, go back to school. Well, what school? Which one? You then, and rather than just picking the first one you see or think about, you know, you explore a little bit. What do I really want to do? What would be the best school? You pursue it logically. So once you have that intuitive hit, you pursue that logically. So this is part of the reminder of how we should treat these intuitive guidances once we find them. But it's not just to be intuitive, be logical. So that you're adding intuition to your everyday logic about how to pursue life in the best way. And it amplifies everything. But you don't give away your logic. You know, you don't bet the house on a plan that you haven't really thought about. Just because you got the gut feeling for it. You know, you still conduct yourself logically. You're just adding this power of your spiritual intelligence to this. Now, this sets. I sense the question. Did you?
Oh no, I was just going to say no, and definitely continue for sure, James.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm just going to move on to the next reminder. And that is to realize that, you know, in spite of the fact that it's really kind of trendy among some circles, most of them intellectual, that there's, you know, that life is an accident, and therefore we can really do whatever we want to do. We can just, you know, live life any way we want to because, you know, we have this, life is, you know, life is absurd, so therefore we can make of it anything we want, and we can do anything we want, treating people any way we want. There's something else, you know, I would say that is a trend that we have to, that our life experience suggests is wrong. Forget all the spiritual traditions in the world and all the religions that talk about a disciplined life and, the Ten Commandments and all the things that come and as a guide to our ethics. Forget about all that. Just our experience itself. We can prove that there's a karmic structure to life. And I certainly proved to myself, anyone who's lived out there in the outer world and seen the way people behave and seen the consequences that people have as a result of their lifestyles, you know, you can prove that there's a pretty simple karmic structure to this life. Prove it to yourself. And here, I just want to go over it. You know, it's very easy to be a giver rather than a taker. And what that means is you can't, if you're a taker, something very interesting happens. That means manipulating people for money, for self-esteem, where you deceive people, essentially lie. You aren't living honestly through life. And that, a very interesting thing happens when you try that approach to life. You begin to run into people that behave exactly like that to you. It's like a reflection. You draw into your life all people who are also takers. Now, people who've been takers all their life, they think everybody's a taker because that's the people that come into their life. But that is a principle you can prove, because if you're a giver, that means, listening for ideas of how you might help someone that you meet that cross your path. If you're a giver, if you give of energy and love and sometimes money and you do it because you think you feel like there's a way that this person can be helped by your connection with them, then the same thing happens. You draw into your life, not takers, but givers. Now, what that means is givers come into your life at just the right moment to be a synchronicity, a meaningful coincidence, give you information just on time for your life to go better and smoother and your goal to come faster. So you see the two principles, and you can prove it to yourself. I know people that are kind of half and half, and they draw into their lives half and half. I know people who are just manipulating takers. That's all that comes into your life. When I was a counselor, I used to counsel prisoners in prison. And without a doubt, the ones who are thieves, who are burglars and robbers, I say, why do you do that? They say, well, everybody steals. And you go, well, I don't know anybody. I don't know anybody that steals. And they would argue with me. No, everybody I've ever known has stolen from me, is what they say. So all that is indicative of this karmic system that I just described. If you're a taker, you're going to draw in takers. Your life's going to go slower. It's going to be harder. And here's the key to this. Thought counts. In other words, maybe you don't lie to anybody. You just admit the truth that puts you in a better life, a better light to them. Or you just are silent when you could have made a difference with them. That's a kind of negative karmic thing to do. So we're all called to kind of help one another. The whole universe is designed for that. It's about learning to be a helper. And the more you're a helper, the more you are helped. And it's something anybody can prove to themselves.
And so, James, I'll ask you the quick question. Just before, I think that was the fourth one, am I correct?
That's right.
Okay. So just before I get you to maybe jump into number five, out of curiosity, you know, based on what you're sharing here, it's something that's interesting to me because we see it often where people that give, I mean, and, you know, they've done studies on this, but people that give seem to be, now I'll clarify this, give without expecting to receive, seem to be on average more fulfilled than people that only take. And you, obviously givers feel that and have experienced that. So I guess we could make the argument, like they said, it's not, as you mentioned, what the maybe takers have experienced and they're not used to because they feel they've been surrounded by maybe takers because that's maybe what, you know, they've maybe perpetuated and their perception is, and also the things that they've done. So it's created that and they draw that in. But why do you think it is when people hear from others or see others that are really happy that are givers for the right reasons, why do you think it is still so hard for the average person that's not a giver to see that or see that there's a lot of benefits or value in being a giver?
Well, I think they rely on the whole thing that life is just life. There's no spiritual reality, no spiritual design to our lives and to this universe. I think it's a lot more fun to think at one level, if all you're doing is kind of manipulating your way through life and manipulating people into doing what you want, you know, you think, that's the best life, that's the best you can do in this life. You know, you just take what you want. Except that it doesn't work that way. Even with people, most of the people who talk like that are who think that might be the case. Usually are younger because life experience absolutely tells one that there's a karmic design. You know, the golden rule is passed along. So every religious tradition has a version of the golden rule. Why? Because that's what has been proved over time to work. And again, in this modern time with, you know, where we live in pop culture and all that, you know, it's hard to just grasp that, you know, the world's not, all this stuff is not just accidental that happens to us. That we've created a kind of secular reality. And that was good in a way because now everyone has to prove it to themselves. It goes, if you go spiritual, it doesn't mean being pious and running around scolding everybody. It means getting into the best possible life that you can find that's adventurous and inspiring, you know. And again, some religions are better than others, but you know, what I've been trying to do is just say there's an authentic spiritual experience that one can discover. Forget the religions altogether. You can prove it to yourself. And so again, I think that's what's happening out there in leaps and bounds, actually, in spite of all the conflicts.
And so then, James, of course, now people, I'm sure, are going, we need to know number five. You know, it's like anything when you hear there's a number system, you always want to know either what number one is or what the last one is. So can you share with us what number five is?
Well, it's to stay in synchronistic flow. So let's say you're practicing all these things, these few things, and you're having, you know, you've found, you know, you've become aware of your own intuitive thoughts, and you're following them the best you can, and you're experiencing what I've called synchronicities, which are mysterious coincidences that help your life go better or present opportunities. Let's say you're doing all that. Well, you can stay in that flow for a while, and it's most people's experience that suddenly you run into a brick wall. You think you've got this project going, or you've got this career, and all of a sudden you hit a brick wall, and something happens where you tried to trust synchronicity and it turned into a disaster. Okay?
Absolutely.
And this is the point at which many people just give up. Oh, that synchronicity stuff is no good. And because it didn't work, keep on working. Well, what we do is run into a tough synchronicity. See, it was still a synchronicity. It was just a tough one. It was a lesson we didn't want to hear. It was a turning of our path in a direction we didn't want to go. And I'm talking about finding a silver lining in every so-called negative event. I think that some negative events are just because of people. We're all imperfect at this point. People do spontaneously disruptive things. So everybody's not where we are. So some things crash, not so much as because they weren't destined to be, but because some of the participants crash in some way. So anyway, here we are. And we have a choice. We can either say, okay, what am I going to do now, and just be dead in the water for a while, or we can say, okay, maybe I'm missing the synchronicity, and that's when we can seek to find, a silver lining meaning to this event. And very often, the way we change our strategies, maybe we have a bad reaction pattern in life, that we're not aware of. So the way we get informed of that sometimes is that a project will fail, or a career will stop moving. And what we do, if we find that silver lining, it very often suggests another intuition will come to make use of that opportunity in the guise of something bad. That silver lining opportunity is there. We can change the way we operate. We can change something else. We can add a whole new talent set. We can become more logical in a way that we weren't as we pursue our dreams. But we have to keep going. In other words, there are no negative synchronicities. There's just a tough synchronicity that we can make the best of, and our lives will continue to move forward.
Wow. So, James, this has been so powerful. And, I love what you did and what you've done here with giving us five ways to sort of take it big picture, because obviously, as readers, a reader myself, I love the ability to keep growing it and go through all the insights and to be able to go through all the books and build upon it. But I know as well, like you said, now as you get those questions of kind of what's the overall or underarching theme and stuff like that, obviously people now are, some people are saying, well, what's the maybe the shortcut or what's the, sadly, what's the shorter version? So I love that you give people such, such practical insight and takeaway that, hopefully they've read the book, but if they haven't read it yet, it gives them a base to build on and work from.
Yep. Each person has to discover that our spiritual nature is real. And that's what the topic of conversation is. And the next question is always, well, if it's real, how do we engage in it in a way that works? And again, so the big picture is really the trying to grasp it kind of as a whole. It's about tuning in. It's about finding our peace so that we're can hear our intuitions and realizing we're being helped in life. And out of that comes a sense of something we want to do. And we have our goals and strategies, and we're trying to, we can keep it all in mind, you know, don't forget to listen for intuitions and don't forget to watch for synchronicities, because that's the flow of life you can get into. And if we stay positive and if we stay givers, not takers, then what happens is our lives can unfold much easier. Life is not supposed to be this hard. And if you're just crashing around out there, you know, the message is, hey, there's get in touch with your spiritual guidance. You know, that's a whole different feeling of intelligence about life that you can download. And one last point I would make is you know, everybody wants to try to save the world or make it better. It's inherent in us. But the only way to do it, we can't make people act the way we want. All we can do is demonstrate a better way of life and participate in the evolution of the world honestly as an open book. And people will learn from what they see in us. That's the only way, in my view, to save the world.
And so, James, would that be would it be fair to say that that's almost a good, let's say, tie into the quote of Gandhi's that people have resonated with, and vice versa, so much the be the change you wish to see in the world?
That's exactly right. And yeah, wise people have said it all over the place, because you know, at the end of at some point in life, one wakes up to that and realizes that, you know, we can't make people do this thing or another. All we can do is live a model of something. And then because we're wired for it, see, our souls, our brains, the universe itself, it's all wired for this spirit, what I call this spiritual evolution. And when we live that and pursue our destiny and the things that we can give to the world, then what happens is we participate again in that evolution, and a lot of people understand this, and I think more people all the time understand this as opposed to the cynical life where we just try to take what we can.
So, James, my last kind of official question in this realm is, when people, because I'm sure this is what you get, and it's probably not the right question in the sense that this, you know, what you're sharing here is stuff that obviously happens over time. It takes time. It's not maybe a get quick, you know, get fixed quick, if you will. But at the same time, in the world we're in today, a lot of people are sort of looking for that, you know, when will I see a difference? When will I see a benefit? What's the in it for me, if you will? But based on your experience, and I don't even know if it's a fair question, but is it something where when people start practicing this, if they haven't been before, you feel they start seeing changes or differences in themselves quickly? Or is it something where it's a create a habit over time, and then slowly but surely you'll start to see differences in yourself and the way you are based on some of these practices?
Well, I would say that, you know, that depends. I think we can glimpse synchronicities, and you know, a lot of the thoughts we think are actually intuition. So our lives, we do experience these moments of synchronicity. Whether it's a flow, always a constant flow or not, is one thing. But we continue, all of us experience these mysterious coincidences, and so, but it won't flow as. You know, in your life, until you can get rid of what drives you, and I should say us. Everybody has a set of fears or emotional hurts that make up this chatter in our minds that we're running from. It's always something, you know, we just try to kind of stay focused on the task at hand and kind of forget what's there that's bothering us. And when you go into prayer meditation and you try to be silent, then all that comes up. Look what my mother did. Look what my father did. Why do I act this way? I overreact, or I'm too fearful, or I'm too hurt emotionally. Everybody feels one of those things. And I mean everybody. So when you start meditation, you're letting that go. So you go to your love connection. That's the divine space You go to your love connection, feel love, your ego goes wild with the chatter, and you realize that you're not feeling love anymore, and you let that go. You don't have to scream at it. You just have to shift back to love. And if you keep going back to love in the meditations, sometimes you can do it half of the meditations, a little bit longer. You can do it three quarters of the meditation time. You know, that's the length of time it'll take before you can move into a continuous, what I call synchronistic flow in your life toward your dreams. You'll become aware of your dreams, and then you'll realize you're being helped, and the universe itself is opening up for your dream. But you have to let the chatter and the hurts go methodically over time in meditation, and then all of a sudden you're free to hear your intuitive thoughts. Like I say, it feels like you're suddenly downloaded something into you that feels like a higher intelligence. You know, these are your thoughts, but they'll suddenly come kind of automatically with an inspiring power behind them. So you think, oh, this is my inspiration. I should do this. I should do that. And when you do, there are synchronicities that will routinely and regularly pay off for you.
And so, James, you know, as we bring things to a close, obviously always the one of the most important questions, of course, because even though we've had a lot of conversations and I feel you've shared a ton of insight, there's only so much we can do, of course, in an interview. So some people want to be a part of a community or connect further. And I know over at the Celestine Vision, you guys do things like allow people that may be a fit to write for Celestine Vision and or submit their articles to be considered. And I know you have a lot of things going on over there. So is that where you would send people to connect with you further? And what are some of those sort of connection options, if you will, to stay engaged in the community you're building?
Well, I'll just suggest people to, if they haven't read the books, to read the books and then join our Facebook chatting group and join in the chat. And there's tons of articles on this subject that we have on the site. I will be speaking regularly somewhere and you'll see that on the site. You'll feel like you're into a community on the site, and you'll be able to join in the Facebook conversation with opinions and questions and so forth. So that's a Celestine Vision is a world that people can move into and read and join the chat.
And I guess, James, a final question, is there anything coming up in terms of upcoming projects or what the future might hold that people can look forward to or that you can share at this time? Or is there any kind of upcoming developments or anything that are on the horizon?
Well, we're going to do the publisher's idea that I love, which is to the first book, Celestine Prophecy. We're going to re-release it so that I'll be doing a lot of traveling then. I'll be in a lot of cities, a lot of countries. And just to fan more flames on all these concepts. We can all do it better. The more of us that, get together and believe in this reality. And that's what it really is. It's a consciousness. And live there, seek to live there. You know, it's a lighter consciousness. And we're more givers. It's magical and it moves forward. So, that'll be fun. So people hear the news about that, the re-release. And then about a year away is a book I'm working on now. So I won't reveal the title just yet, but it'll be upcoming and talk a lot about the details of what we've been talking about.
Wow. Love it, James. And this, as I promised and knew, was an absolute pleasure. I knew it would be, and I promised it would be. And I'll call this once again, as I always do, a to be continued, because I know this is a conversation that stays alive. And as amazing as it is, I know no matter how many times we explore this and related areas, we never run out of great content or details, or we never really, we scratch the surface all the time, but we never really seem to take it all and use it all up. So I love the fact that there's always more that we can continue and explore. So thank you so much for being such a great guest, and hopefully you'll join us in the near future yet again.
Well, certainly, Corey. Loved it very much. Talk to you soon.
Awesome. So, James, we're officially done.
Okay.
Hopefully that felt good, and that's what you were hoping for.
Yeah, that's great. You know, it's just what's up, and you know, from that going forward, you know, I'd like to just talk about what's up, and you know, what I kind of sort of sense the questions are out there, and respond in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. And from my end too, when you mentioned that we wanted to cover it kind of on an overview and a big picture scale, I wasn't 100% sure exactly where we would go. So I just kind of let you take the lead, and I think it took us in the places it was meant to.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing too, just
I thought it worked great.
Yeah, I thought it felt perfect, and I think listeners will absolutely love it. And the other thing too, just as a keep in your mind or an FYI and as a possible thing we could chat about in the future, I was just thinking about it, as you mentioned, the questions that you're getting. Perhaps what I can do, and it engages people and it gets some interaction involved, is I could even pose some questions when we're preparing for our next one on social media, like on Facebook, even through my newsletter, that people might have for James Redfield, if you're up into that.
That'd be great.
And then we
that'd be fun.
Well, yeah, we can address questions, and at the same time, it gets people really engaged, and I find then they take ownership in sharing the episode and wanting to listen because they know that there's a chance their question might be asked. So it becomes a win-win.
Yep. Let me make sure you let me know when you're going to release the audio. And I'll plug your site.
Absolutely. And that
we'll get my people in it too.
What's that, sorry?
I said we'll get my people headed to listen to it live, and that'd be good.
Yeah, no, that sounds perfect. And I was going to mention as well that when I asked you that last question, I know we had the conversation, but I wasn't sure if you were able to say anything about the re-release or anything. So that's why you could probably tell that it's the question I was driving at, but
yeah.
I didn't want to back you into a corner on it. So,
no, you're expert at all that.
Oh, thank you so much. I always really appreciate it, and I always appreciate your time and insight, and I know how much value it gives to our listeners and even me in the process. So thank you for being you and all the amazing things you're doing.
Well, listen, we'll continue to talk. You know, we're developing this idea a little bit and just brainstorming here on our end on the affiliation release of the new book when it gets here. So let's keep talking about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been traveling the last couple of days and doing some speaking and stuff, so I've been thinking about that too. So I'm still in that thinking process. But yeah, absolutely. No matter what, we're going to find a way to for me to help wave the flag and help make some things happen. So no matter what, we'll make some stuff happen, and we'll just kind of keep diving into and exploring, you know, which way we do that.
Okay, absolutely. Yeah, I've got a I'm about ready to write a little, you know, 20-point. Summary of the idea pretty soon. I'll zip that over to you.
Okay. No, that sounds perfect to me, and I will keep you in the loop and let you know before this goes live so that you can share or even take a peek and listen yourself, and we'll just go from there.
Okay, man. Well, awesome. I really enjoyed Once Nailed More, and I think it's a good work, or you're just really powerful, this sort of outreach that you do. It's really it really always feels authentic, and not all interviewers can do that.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It means the world to me. I mean, you know, we never mind hearing that, in the sense that it reminds us why we're doing what we're doing. So no, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Okay, so you take care of yourself. Have fun.
You too, and we'll chat in the very near future, James.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay, talk to you soon. Thank you.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.